Welcome back to Your Valley Sports Plug. It is Tuesday, January 28th, 2025, and this is a VSP Roundtable. We are back at it again. We're going to stream every Tuesday at 7 p.m., so make sure you tune in. You can always catch us on the playback across all streaming platforms at Spotify, Apple Podcasts. I don't know any other podcast places, but wherever you can find them, that's where you'll find us. Also, right here where we are recording this live, youtube.com. Look us up, Valley Sports Plug. Hopefully you're watching already. If you are, make sure you like and subscribe. Leave a comment so you can let us know you showed up and what you think of the stream. But we have a very special guest joining us as well as my co-host here. We have Mr. Benjamin, of course, VSP Tallman, and Ian at Dead Boy Donut. Fellas, how's it going? Mike, how are we feeling on Tuesday?
Oh, what is it? Going up on a Tuesday. Gentlemen, feeling good. Tallman, Ian, how you doing? Had some late breaking news. The great Brittany Griner is no longer with the Phoenix Mercury. I'm sure we're just going to be spitballing today. We're going to have some fun. But yeah, Tallman, how you doing, man?
Doing good. Is Brittany going to play for Russia?
Outside of the WNBA.
In the first two minutes, he can't even.
Okay, I'm doing great, guys. Feeling good. It's Tuesday.
I'm also doing good.
There you go. Sorry.
Didn't mean to leave dead air. That's my bad. I'm chilling. I'm new page for the Mercury. We'll see what they do. Brittany Griner has been a thing the entire time I lived here. So change is always exciting.
Yeah, that's true. She was drafted by the Mercury, had played in Phoenix up until this point, and kind of became a cornerstone of the franchise, heavily involved in the community as well. I know my manager at my work, yes, Valley Sports Plug is not my full-time job. I know, it's shocking. But she's a big WNBA fan, and she was telling me a story about how her and her family had met Brittany Griner out in public. Super nice lady. So I think in that regard, it is a loss for the Valley. I think Mike might be the most tapped in as far as the actual on the court product. I don't want to throw him under the bus, but I guess I'd have to imagine, you know, they made this move that was announced earlier in the day. They traded for a forward. I think her name was Alyssa Thompson. So I think, Mike, these moves got to kind of go hand in hand, right?
Yeah. And it was funny, I think Ian was saying kind of before the stream, this might be the writing on the wall for Diana Taurasi and her eventual retirement. I know, you know, during the offseason, I think she was going to kind of sit down with her wife, Penny Taylor, ex-Phoenix Mercury as well. I don't know if you guys realize that. They were teammates. That's how they met. But yeah, I mean, what? 12 years with the team. She averaged almost 18 points a game, 8 rebounds a game, brought a title to the Phoenix Mercury. I don't think she won multiple. I think it was just one. But yeah, I mean, has been a cornerstone for the franchise for the past decade. So turning a new leaf for the Phoenix Mercury, it'll be interesting to see who else they bring in. But yeah, I mean, that's fine. Let's get some new blood in here, gentlemen. You know what I'm saying? The same way that the WNBA has started to, you know, garner some new faces with Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese, who's the tall Los Angeles Sparks girl who tore her ACL.
Cameron Brink.
That's right. You know, those new ones. Juju Watkins is coming in soon as well. But, you know, hats off to Brittany Griner. She was just an awesome piece to this franchise for so many years. And hopefully she finds success with the Atlanta Dream, because probably means the Mercury are going to be a ways away for at least a little bit, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's always interesting when you lose a piece like that, because Mike, you're right. She did win the one title in 2014. His 10-time All-Star, you know, she's not just a face of the Mercury, but like a face of the WNBA in a lot of ways. And of course, as Tallman had to chime in, had some legal and international issues, was in the news a lot for that. I think that's probably what most people in the country know her for. But also, I mean, going back even before all that drama in 2022, there was talks, I don't remember the year. I can't find it. But Mark Cuban had made comments at one point where he was entertaining the idea of giving her a tryout with the Mavericks to potentially play in the NBA. Never came to fruition. Don't know how it would have went, but Brittany Griner is 6'9". I don't know. So obviously, maybe influential isn't the right word, but a notable figure. And so I think whenever you lose someone with that kind of status, you know, they say there's no such thing as bad press. I know the whole Russia thing was very polarizing for a lot of people, mostly I think outside of the WNBA community, people that had a strong opinion on that. But I mean, at least like a negative strong opinion on it. I mean, I know a lot of people did have strong opinions in general, but Tallman, I can tell that you're not going to miss Brittany Griner in Phoenix, are you?
Oh, Jesus. Why you set me up like that?
Oh, you set yourself up. Get out of here.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. I don't. If I knew that we were going to start off the stream talking about WNBA, I would have probably said my garbage disposal is broken. I'm just kidding. I don't, dude, guys, I don't follow it. I will be brutally honest, and then after we're done with this, I'm gonna only contribute a joke about Russia to the conversation, which is absolutely terrible. So I apologize.
No, I mean it's all good. I didn't expect us to spend a lot of time talking about it. It was just the late breaking news, and honestly, as I've already admitted, I'm not fully well versed on the actual on the court product of the WNBA, which I think, I mean, for myself and for a lot of people, it's probably going to change a lot as it gets to be more competitive and more entertaining to watch, which I think with all the new players coming in and the fresh talent and just it's just basketball. I mean, the same in the NBA. Mike and I were having this conversation on Pass the Outlet last week. We were dusting off the old Michael Jordan, LeBron James debate and just talking about how the game has changed so much. So if you put LeBron in the Jordan era, he's going to dominate even more than he already does in the modern era. You bring Michael Jordan into the modern era, and I'm not going to rehash that conversation. Go back and watch Pass the Outlet if you want to know my thoughts on that. But I think it is the same for the WNBA. But man, I mean, we got Ian in here. He is our resident New York sports fan. He's big on the Yankees and the Nets. The Nets, right? It's crazy because like New York is kind of like California in that regard. They have so many different sports teams going on, but I feel like you always fall into one camp or the other. But while we have Ian here, I did want to chat a little bit about baseball. A lot happening, so we can kind of bounce around. And if you guys haven't noticed, there's not a solid structure for this roundtable today, so we're just gonna have fun. It might be some dead air, but we're gonna try out this format. We've only done it a handful of times, but I think it's going well. Just to make the conversations a little more free flowing and natural. But Ian, I wanted to ask you a question about the Yankees and Aaron Judge specifically, because I'm just gonna call it Twitter. I was on Twitter last night, and this guy was like I follow a lot of sports betting Twitter, and he put up a tweet basically saying to parlay Aaron Judge to have 60 home runs, Shohei Ohtani to have 50 home runs, and Juan Soto to have 40 home runs. Now, Aaron Judge had, I think, 58 last season. I didn't pull the trigger on tailing that bet, but how good of a shot do you think that guy has for Aaron Judge to get 60?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it's kind of set in stone at this point, and the thing that Aaron Judge has to disprove to everybody is that he's a regular season player. It's going to be a dude who balls out when it's not the playoffs. All he really has to do is stay healthy. He does have a history of injuries, you know, being 6'7", 235 or whatever the hell he is. You know, that's a lot of body to throw around in an outfield. So he does get injured a lot. That would stop me from taking that bet. But as long as he puts up a healthy season where he's playing 150 games, yeah, he can absolutely crack 60 home runs. No doubt in my mind. The only thing that has to happen is he just needs to stay on the field.
Now, Ian, I don't think we've had you on to talk about the bad news, unfortunately, right? With Juan Soto taking the deal with the New York Mets, man. I mean, it has been a couple of weeks now. I'm sure the wounds have started to heal for you a little bit. But I just want to know, what was your first initial reaction when you heard that news, man?
I got PTSD from when we missed out on re-signing Robinson Cano. That's exactly what that reminded me of. I think as a Yankees fan, when it comes to missing out on free agents, those are the two that probably stung the most, because usually, you know, comes with the territory of, you know, there's two sides of the same coin there, where there's players that, you know, it's their lifelong dream to play for the Yankees, all that shit. And then the other side of it is there's, you know, free agents that want nothing to do with us because they grew up hating the Yankees. And we miss it on people like that all the time, where, you know, Ken Griffey Jr. is a really famous one. So that doesn't sting so much because it's just part of what you get being a Yankee fan. But the ones where we had them and they just left for, like, you know, the minuscule amount of money that Juan Soto left for, on top of, you know, Cano left for tax purposes. Washington State doesn't have income tax, so he ended up making more money over there. It's little shit like that where it's like, goddamn, like it was all business to them, and that does sting a lot. The silver lining is, I always complained that the Yankees were a top heavy team. You know, they had Judge and nobody else for a while, and then they got Soto, and then it was Judge and Soto and nobody else. They're starting to balance things out. Like, their rookies are starting to produce. Austin Wells is looking like he might be good. It's going to be a make or break year for Volpe. And then after that, you know, Goldschmidt is an improvement over Rizzo, even though he's 60 years old. Max Fried is good. Devin Williams is good. Like they're filling in spots where they needed to fill in, and just kind of saying, fuck Soto, he never existed. And that is kind of something that I wanted to see. I forgot Cody Bellinger as well. We got him. So our team's a little more rounded out than it was when we had Soto, and it's not just going to be Judge, Soto, and then a bunch of dudes hitting 200 batting average. So there's hope, I would say.
They still have Jazz Chisholm, right?
They do, yeah. He is – I think they're torn as to whether or not – because we lost Gleyber Torres, kind of let him walk. So we don't know if we're going to play Jazz at second or third right now. That's kind of the big debate, because we don't know who's going to play third if we keep Jazz as second. It's going to be something they figure out in spring training, I think.
You mentioned letting Torres walk. I remember we were talking last season, and it's kind of like a, you know, good riddance kind of feeling, I'd imagine, for Yankees fans, because you were saying that when they did bring on Jazz, they were asking him and Gleyber who would be willing to play third. And Jazz was like, company man, I'll do anything you need me to do. And Gleyber was like, no, I'm a shortstop, second baseman or whatever.
Yeah, second base. Yeah, that is the case. It's not good riddance the way it was with, like, Joey Gallo, or, like, you know, it's not like, fuck this guy, don't let the door hit you. But it is like, we know what we're getting. We know what his ceiling is, and we need more. So, you know, he's going to go get his bag on – where did he go? The Tigers, I think. But, yeah, we just needed to move on from him, and – I'm glad we did, honestly, because it's shit like that that I don't want a player that's gonna, you know, say no like that on the team, for sure.
Now, I mean, the Yankees, it just seems like they always find ways to reload, whether it be, you know, some aging superstars, if you really think about it, with Paul Goldschmidt going into year 15, who had some really great seasons with the St. Louis Cardinals, if you want to be completely honest with you. I'm with you. I think I'm aligned with you that he is an upgrade from Anthony Rizzo, who has started to kind of take the downturn in his career. We're also bringing in Cody Bellinger, who had, you know, a bounce back season with the Chicago Cubs. But Tallman, it just seems like we're always talking about the same two franchises every year, right? With the big, big signings, right? You have the one-offs with Juan Soto going to the Mets, right? Mm-hmm. Kind of the same thing a couple years ago with Manny Machado going to the San Diego Padres. But now the Los Angeles Dodgers find themselves getting another Japanese superstar in Roki Sasaki with all of this deferred money. I mean, speak candid with me, Tom. What's going on in the major leagues right now? Is this anything that's sustainable for franchises like the Arizona Diamondbacks to truly compete with these high-end franchises?
Well, to sum it up in one word, it's disgusting. I mean, it's just absolutely gross. For a small town team like the Diamondbacks, you can't compete payroll wise. You got to look at it. You got to be a little smarter with what you do, right? You got to get these guys young on hometown deals. Like we saw with Paul Goldschmidt, he signed that 3-year, like $36 million deal, which he outplayed, which we're watching right now with Corbin Carroll. But there's no way in hell. I mean, granted, let's give the D-backs and the owner Ken Kendrick some props. You know, he had the highest payroll in team history last season. So we're getting there, but we're never going to get to LA status, New York status, both teams in New York, that is. It's just something that we have to deal with. I've said it before on here. There needs to be some type of salary cap. There needs to be like something comparable to what was introduced in the NBA with the second apron, where there's got to be some type of penalty for these teams that keep spending and spending and spending because they have the means to spend, unlike the Diamondbacks and basically probably 3/4 of the league. So it gets to a point where it's like when we saw the same two teams in the NBA finals every single year, where you're like, okay, well, the regular seasons doesn't matter. It's pointless. You know, let's get through this shit. Who cares if we're a 4th, 5th, or 6th seed? All that matters is the playoffs. This is what baseball is becoming. Granted, for us, we've had pretty exciting last two seasons, us being the Diamondbacks. Obviously, last season was a huge disappointment, total collapse. But with the MLB, it's just like you're going to see these same players buying championships. And if you think the Dodgers did not buy a championship last season, you are not paying attention to Major League Baseball in 2024, because they absolutely did that. So, like I said to start it off, it's disgusting. It's getting to a point where we're just numb, right? Us in Arizona, we're like the little brother, the LA. They keep signing all these players. They're getting all these foreign prospects coming in. It's nothing new to us, right? I mean, we'll hang our hat on that Corbin Burns headline, that big signing, splash signing. But what, that lasted maybe 2 days on the headlines, and then everyone stopped talking about it because the Dodgers just took over. So I don't know. I still like our chances, though. I think we can be competitive against them. But again, it's just gross. We're just going to see the same teams, the same shit happening over and over again every single year. So I'd like to see some type of restrictions put in place.
This is just fucking disgusting. Plus 250 before a single game has even been played to be the World Series favorite. I mean,
they bought those odds right there. 250 is wild.
Yeah. Yeah, literally, that's just like payroll and talent alone. And like the Yankees to be the next closest at 750, like, it makes sense that they are the next closest, but that there's a 500 point gap in between them is just absolutely absurd. And it's a steep fall off after that, where you can like, the sports books, they're pretty well tuned in. You know, I mean, baseball, there you can always have the Cinderella story. I think if you had asked anyone before the 2023 season had started, if it would be D-backs, Rangers in the World Series, people probably wouldn't have believed you. But I mean, come on. I mean, you got D-backs down there at plus 3,000. For my money, they've only gotten better since last season and only two seasons removed from the World Series. Granted, they did miss the playoffs entirely last year, which, you know, might be factoring into it. But
don't remind us, Chris.
I don't know. I mean, so that's the World Series league winners. I mean, they got to be minus, right? No, plus 140.
Oh, they better not be. Do they have divisions?
Oh, yeah, because that's national.
Yeah, go to the division. Okay. They're probably so minus on that one.
Oh, yeah. They're minus 490.
You've got to be kidding me.
That is so gross. I mean, the contrast would be like,
how many times in a row have they won it? So, I mean, that makes sense that they're minus 490.
I'm taking the Rockies.
Hey, that's a value bet, Ian. You know,
never say never, bro.
Yeah, what is that? I can't see. Is that
plus 50,000? So a $1 bet, does a $1 bet get you $50,000 then?
I think so, right? No. That's how it
works. $500.
$500. Okay.
Yeah, no, it's
so $100 bet gets you $50,000. That's right.
All right. So the Los Angeles Dodgers have won 11 of the past 12 NL West titles. In 2021, do you know who was the team who won? Which stopped the 8-year run?
The Giants.
It was the Giants. Yep.
Yeah.
But, okay. Tallman, yep. You brought up a great point. It was something that I tweeted about after watching the ridiculous tush pushes this weekend as well. What's the true value of adding in a salary cap in the MLB? I know you kind of talked about it. Ian, I got to know what's your thoughts on it. Like, does that really create any more of a competitive value for the league itself? Or are you just hindering these really super teams, which are probably continue to be the betting favorites, but also are bringing eyeballs? Because if you talk about numbers, really at the end of the day, this past World Series was one of the most watched in what, the past 15, 20 years, right? So does the MLB even want to go away from that model?
Yeah. This is a tricky one for me being a Yankee fan, obviously. And I try to approach it depending on my answer changes depending on who I'm talking to, but basically where I stand with it, I'm okay with a salary cap, but that's only, you know, that gets rid of, you know, that fixes the issue that you have with the Dodgers spending, Yankees, Mets, teams like that, that are, you know, your larger market teams that have the ability to do so. But I also think you need something of, you know, a minimum budget where you are going to say you have to spend this much money in order to compete, because you also have teams like, we'll call them Sacramento now, and Pittsburgh, where, you know, they're cutting people right before they're about to get bonuses and just doing all kinds of shit, just pocketing the profit share that the MLB has. And I think that is a little more commonplace than what we're seeing with the Dodgers and the Yankees. I think that the concerns with not having a salary cap are definitely valid, but you know, if you want to rise the tide and lift all ships, that's something that needs to be done, is making sure that every team actually is competing. Now I say that knowing full well that the Diamondbacks are actually a team that is a small market and do the best that they can with what they have. And so that's why I try to tread lightly in this conversation, is because I don't want to be like, oh, well, fuck you, just spend more money. Because no, you're spending the money you have for sure. In terms of what you asked me, would the MLB want to move away from what they have now? That becomes a debate on, are we watching, like in the World Series last year, did we really watch the Yankees versus the Dodgers, or was the marquee names more like Judge and Ohtani? Was it like a names thing instead of a teams thing? I don't really know. It probably is a teams thing, but I like to think that, you know, if Judge was on the Rays and Ohtani was on the Rockies in some other universe, that people would still be tuning in to see that. They just want to see the two best players play against each other.
Yeah, I think that's what it comes down to at the end of the day, is that people do want to see parity in the league, but they also want to see, you know, the superstars is what really draws new fans to the sport. And I think we live in a day where people are for sure still fans of teams. I don't think that's ever going to go away, but it's far more common now for people to be a fan of a single player. Like, there's so, and I personally feel like that kind of started with LeBron James, where people were just a fan of him. And so they, you know, became Heat fans, and then they became Cavs fans again, and now they're Lakers fans, and they just really like themselves some LeBron James. I think Odell Beckham had a little bit of that too for a little while, and it's crazy. Dude made his entire career off of one single catch, but there are those guys that just transcend, you know, the sport with their talent. And Judge is definitely one of those guys. Otani is a unicorn, you know, if you will, and not like the Kristaps Porzingis type of unicorn, but like a genuine, like one of a kind. The term generational talent, I feel like, is thrown around far too much these days. But like, that is for sure Shohei Ohtani. But it is hard. Like, I'm very sympathetic towards the argument of having a salary cap, and I wouldn't be opposed to it by any means. But I don't know. At the end of the day, why are you? I don't know. It's tough because, like, you bring up the profit sharing thing. Like, the Pirates, it seems like their ownership doesn't want to be good. The Athletics, it seems like they don't want to be good. They're more worried about a new arena and or a new stadium and moving and profit, and not even, you know, taking into account their on-field product. And I mean, I didn't go to school for economics or business or anything like that, but I'd imagine if you have a good on-the-field product, that's going to translate into money in the bank through ticket sales, merchandise, TV deals, whatever. I don't know. Call me crazy, but I agree with Tallman, salary cap. Because Tallman, your argument is that you would be in favor of a salary cap, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's been a bunch of talks about it. So it's something that we could definitely see the proposal come up, but I mean, it's got to be agreed on by the players union, right? Do you think they're not going to approve it? Because they want to make as much money as they possibly can.
Yes. Biggest issue, man.
Yeah.
That would totally be the biggest issue. Cause what? I think the collective bargaining agreement comes up in like 2027 or something. If it is really something that is pushed by the ownership of the MLB, and they have to go and talk to the players about what this would look like, they better have their ducks in a row, or else you're talking about a lockout, and probably a long-term lockout until they find some kind of, you know, stance that everybody can be making their $700 million somehow if they really are the upper echelon elite. Because that's the other thing too, guys. Like some of these guys, like are we really talking about some guys deserving $200 million for the production levels that they really give? You know, like it's not the case, but the MLB has just, especially over the past 20 years, become that league that can dump money into great guys. And there was a certain time frame too. I would say the NBA was around that as well. You know, you remember these weird, you know, like eighth rotation players who were getting like $120 million contracts, and you're like, wait, how is this happening?
What was that, you know? Dude, Tyler Johnson? You remember him? He got like, yeah, a fat bag.
One time Phoenix Sun. I think he signed like a 5-year, $180 million deal with the Miami Heat or something like that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, taking away money from these players is going to be such a hard task for anybody. But it just seems like the competitive advantage truly for the overall league it's not in a good spot right now, I would say. And the cherry on the top is this Roki Sasaki signing. But good Lord, that's why one day I'm just going to have to sit down with Raymond and be like, I need a PowerPoint presentation why this is good for the MLB. And it can't be leading off with this profit sharing bullshit, because we're past that, man. Now it's about how, you know, especially we're ones that get stuck in the same division. 11 of the past 12 years, man. Like, when the fuck are we going to be able to win a division title if they keep signing and deferring all of the best, you know? But,
And that's the thing. It's not like it'd be a different story if the Dodgers were building up through their farm, but they aren't doing that. They're just signing the top tier free agency players, and now their favorite move is going overseas and getting every Japanese person that can play baseball to go play in Los Angeles. I will say, though, in kind of skimming this article, I didn't realize that there is a competitive balance tax in the MLB, which since 1996,
that's what I was going to bring up. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just read this real quick, and then you can expand on it if I miss anything.
No, because I misspoke earlier saying they need something comparable to like the second apron in NBA. Sorry, go ahead, Chris.
No, you're good. It just says in 2024, the luxury tax threshold was set at $237 million, and 9 teams went over that and contributed $311 million in taxes. The Dodgers alone were assessed more than $103 million in taxes, which meant that they outspent just in luxury tax the entire payrolls of the bottom six teams in the league. So, I mean, and that a tax only goes so far if you have a billionaire owner or investment group that's willing to pay. So if you have a Matt Ishbia that's willing to pay that tax because they know it'll come back to them tenfold. And I mean, within the same article, it highlights the fact that the Dodgers have committed $2 billion in the last two seasons to players' contracts, you know, present and deferred money. So, it's just, it's outrageous to me. It's outrageous to me that, you know, this is great. That I'm glad there is at least a luxury tax to try and deter them to some point, but something's got to give because fans are getting frustrated. I don't know if the ownership of all these other franchises feel the same way, but the last thing I'll say is this article also highlights that the MLB's collective bargaining agreement does expire in 2026, and this is expected to be a hot topic when that rolls around. But Tallman, do you have anything to add there?
Yeah, so no, that was I was going to mention the $103 million paid by the Dodgers. So that sounds like a big number, but I mean, revenue for the Dodgers, I was trying to get a straight answer. For just last year, it's like over $500 million. And they won the World Series. Just imagine how much money they actually made. They're going to pay that $103 million like it's nothing. And to compare it to the NBA, you guys know what the Suns are paying right now in luxury tax. It's $160 million. It's more damning than what the Dodgers are getting penalized for. So maybe if there's no salary cap, make it hurt if these teams are going to keep spending and spending and spending to get them to maybe, you know, refrain from doing this excessive spending. Because right now it's like $100 million a year for the Dodgers to be plus 250 to win the World Series a month before spring training starts every single season. They're going to keep paying that. You know, it just doesn't make sense. Something's got to give because it's getting pointless at this point. And it's, I don't know, it's just gross. It's gross.
They're going to make that tax money back just from selling their World Series championship merch.
Yeah, there's yikes, one man. Something I saw that says the Dodgers have already made $120 million just off having Shohei Ohtani on the team for one season. Isn't that crazy?
I mean, I believe it because they're going to pocket every single piece of merchandise. I mean, not obviously probably not the whole amount. I'm sure Shohei gets a cut of that, but they're raking in money from the merchandise sales. That's for sure. And they now, I think it's honestly smart of them to get all this Japanese talent because you're tapping into the international market where I would imagine 95% of Japanese citizens that are interested in MLB baseball are going to be Dodgers fans. And I don't blame them. You know, I don't blame them one bit, but it's just, I don't know, Ian, maybe you can answer this question for me. What do you think is it just the money why all these Japanese stars are signing there? Or is it a sense of camaraderie or, you know, is there something really appealing about paying exorbitant taxes in the state of California?
I think it's, picking, you know, one of the teams that has, you know, the lights are the brightest there. I think Ohtani signing there is the, you know, the catalyst. But I really think the reason that all those Japanese guys are going there is, I think it's all part of what we saw in what year was it, 2022? When the World Baseball Classic is what I'm referencing here. Basically, they had that crazy ass murderers row team, and that's where all of these guys came from: Roki Sasaki, Yoshinobu Yamamoto, Ohtani. I think Kodai Senga was on there. They have more guys coming down the pipe. Just yes, it is camaraderie. They're joining the Dodgers for that reason, and they know that they can do that in one of the biggest cities in the country, and one of the biggest cities in the country with one of the biggest populations of Japanese people. So it's kind of a perfect storm of, you know, marketing strategy. That's kind of how I see it. It's like they're picking where they're going to be the most popular, where they can, you know, play together and just win and rake.
I mean, it makes sense that it wouldn't be just like one singular thing that makes him pull the trigger, because I'd imagine if it were just all about where you can get the most exposure and the lights and everything, New York would be almost equally as appealing. The Yankees more specifically, but also the Mets, they get plenty of attention as well. But yeah, man, it's not like the MLB can be like, you can only have a certain number of Japanese players on your roster. So it's like, I wouldn't say it's necessarily a problem. I think as far as my hierarchy of concern goes, it would definitely be more with the deferred contracts and the amount of money that the Dodgers are shelling out. Cause it's like the way they're trending, they're going to have double, triple the payroll of every other team in the league. And then what do you do? What do you do if the Dodgers are winning 100+ games every season, walking into the World Series, and then people just stop caring about watching baseball when they know their team has no chance of even scratching the surface? I mean, we talk about them. What was it? 10 out of last 11 or something like that, that the Dodgers have won the division. So like, if you're trying to be a Rockies fan or a Giants fan or fuck a D-backs fan, like literally we have these conversations where we're like, all right, we know the Dodgers are going to win the division, so we have to make it in through the wild card. And that's tough. That's tough. And I'd imagine the players, it's gotta be hard for them as well, knowing that like, you're going to play your heart out. You're going to do the best you can. And you have to hope that you make a wild card spot, beating out the rest of the National League versus just trying to win your own division.
Yeah. I think the Diamondbacks as a team kind of know that that's their spot too. I think that it would serve them well morale wise to lean into it and be like, yeah, we're, you know, it's our job to make the Dodgers nightmare or their seasons a nightmare as much as they possibly can. And really just, I think you can do that. And I like Corbin Burnes is a big signing, man. Like, obviously, you know, the Dodgers did load up, but I don't know. I do think the Diamondbacks can steal some games, I guess is what I'm trying to say here.
Oh, they absolutely can. That's the beautiful thing about baseball is they play so many goddamn games. Mm-hmm. You know, they're all professional baseball players, man. You know, it's like that any given Sunday type saying for football. It's like you can steal some of these games for sure. But, I mean, it was just damning, those odds for them to win the division, the Dodgers, that we mentioned earlier, the minus 490. It's like they're going to win the division. That's probably the safest bet in baseball right now. But, I mean, I know we're beating the hell out of this salary cap topic, but just the contrast between the highest spender and the lowest spender. I mean, we've mentioned it before. The Mets are $308 million, and then you go down to the Athletics, it's $63 million. You compare that to any other major sport in America, that's the biggest swing because of this reason of no salary cap. So, I mean, they got to do something about it before it gets out of hand. And you could argue right now it's already out of hand.
Where's Billy Bean when you need him?
Yeah, there you go.
Everybody's going to have to start doing ball. Some money ball.
He's paying Oakland $63 million still.
Well, maybe they're starting to turn the corner. They just gave Brent Rooker a 5-year, $60 million contract.
I don't know why they didn't trade him. That's
I don't know why he didn't sign somewhere else.
That too.
Are you telling me he couldn't have gotten $60 million somewhere else? Yeah, I mean, he's a big bat.
He's 29 too. He's not young.
Yeah.
They did just pay Luis Severino like more than he's worth too, which was really, really weird. I think he got the biggest contract in their franchise's history.
I think you're right.
It's just hilarious. I remember seeing that.
Maybe he's a huge gambler. He's just, you know.
Well, he's got to wait 3 years.
Still.
He's got to play in Sacramento.
That's why he signed a 5-year contract, because he knows eventually he's going to be.
There you go.
Right.
Well, all right. I don't blame him then.
It's so confusing to me. Like, what is Oakland trying to do? Are they trying to be good? Are they trying to be competitive? Because last year they had this guy, what's his name? Estruy Ruiz, who in 2023 stole 67 bases. He played in what? 29 games, and he was picking up right where he left off, and they sent him down to AAA to waste away the rest of the season. I mean, maybe he wasn't
batting so great. Looks like he was batting about 200, but I mean, that's just based off like 55 at bats or something like that. So I don't know. If you have a guy that can steal the bases in this day and age, that's what every team wants. I mean, you look at the Ellie De La Cruz's, the Corbin Carrolls of the world who can burn the bases. That's a good way to get runs across the board. And then pair him with Brent Rooker. I mean, it's pretty sad that I can only name three Oakland Athletics players, but, and honestly, most of that knowledge is just through fantasy baseball and MLB The Show. I don't know, man. Oakland is a poverty franchise. There's a reason they don't get brought up, but
you know, another player, come on, think hard. He was playing on the Pirates. We went to the game where he was playing in the outfield.
Miguel Andujar.
Yeah.
Hey. Miguel. I didn't know he was still in the league.
Ian used to love himself some Andujar.
Andujar was the man. Got hurt and was never the same again.
Yeah. Yeah. But we're only in January talking about baseball. I mean, what, pitchers and catchers report in like 2-3 weeks. So right around the corner.
I'm very excited to get Nico back on the pod to talk about his experiences working with the Milwaukee Brewers, especially with pitchers and catchers coming in 2 weeks, man. Very, very excited. We'll probably have some content out there too in Maryville. So
I hope so, man. That would be sick. But I mean, I don't know, guys. What else is on your mind this fine Tuesday evening? What you got, Mike?
I'm ready to talk about it.
Don't do it. More.
We have to.
You know what I'm going to bring up?
Sick of hearing about this guy. Go ahead.
About who? Who are we talking about, Tallman?
Jimmy Butler.
The elephant. Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Ian.
Yeah.
I got to know, man. If you're in the Phoenix Suns spot, would you try and bring this locker room cancer to the Phoenix Suns to see if you can make it work with a different big three? You think it would work?
Is there a precedent for that? Like, has a big three ever not worked out? So they just go and get one more player and then it turns around. I feel like that's not a thing that exists in reality at all. Like, especially when the dude's, what is he, like 36?
35. Yep.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I don't think that's the move. At best, you're a little bit better. Maybe like, I don't see it. Like, what was the question you posed in the group chat earlier?
So I got an ESPN alert that the Sacramento Kings are shopping De'Aaron Fox. And so my question was, if you're looking to swap out Bradley Beal in this big three, would you rather have Jimmy Butler or De'Aaron Fox? And I guess the second part of that question I'm asking now is, would it make a difference? Because real quick, before I open the floor for you guys to answer that question, Ian, I know big threes are often in more recent history haven't worked out, but I don't know that we've ever seen one piece of that big three be swapped out for another third person. So I think that could be interesting. But Mike, would it even matter?
For the way that the Phoenix Suns floor spacing works, just the generality of their team. I mean, guys, there's a reason that Bradley Beal has been moved to the bench. It's because him and Devin Booker do two similar of things. And let's also be honest, Bradley Beal does them to a lesser extent than Devin Booker does, right? We were too guard heavy in the starting lineup, especially with Tyus Jones. You see now that Tyus has kind of gone out of the lineup basically within the last 5 minutes. Now they're sticking, when Ryan Dunn is healthy, is in there. Last night against the Los Angeles Clippers, Royce O'Neal was playing down the stretch. Grayson Allen was too. I mean, freaking Mason Plumlee played like the last 20 minutes of that game, but that's besides the fact. For what Jimmy Butler does, he brings tenacity on the floor. I don't think you're going to have to really question his motor, especially for somebody who is basically put his crosshairs in on Phoenix, that this is the place that he wants to be. So it'll at least, he'll show his value within the first season and a half or two, right? Until he sours and the same thing happens, because this is all he does at every single stop that he goes to, gentlemen. I mean, this isn't late breaking news for anybody, which is still so crazy to me why the Phoenix Suns are interested in this, where we already have locker room issues, you know, Yusuf Nurkic not talking to Mike Budenholzer and all this other bullshit that's going on. But he rebounds the ball a lot better. He's probably not as great of a on-ball defender as Bradley Beal, but he has bigger size. He'll be able to get you rebounds, man, stopping second chance opportunities. That's why the Suns, after making this Nick Richards trade, have been a lot more successful recently, because you know you're not giving up as many offensive rebounds and really shutting down second chance opportunities. But I am just so worried about, if you make this trade, what kind of capital do you have to give up? You're going to give up Ryan Dunn again? Like, you know, the Tumani Kamara experience that Portland has been experiencing, for lack of a better word, is because Portland doesn't have anybody. They had to play him. So then you kind of see what you were made of. But he was an unknown. But Ryan Dunn is a known for this Phoenix Suns team right now. And he is definitely a piece that can be part of your future. So if that has to be involved, if multiple first round picks have to be involved, I don't see this as an option for the Phoenix Suns to do. Now, Chris, this is my last point. I will go back to your original question. If it were the case for trading those kind of pieces for De'Aaron Fox, I might be more aligned to pull that kind of a trade off, because I really, really like De'Aaron Fox. I think that he's coming into the prime of his career. And yeah, I mean, pair a true point guard with these other guys and see what happens. I wouldn't hate it at all.
No, because I mean, like, right off the bat, De'Aaron Fox is 8 years younger than Jimmy Butler. You know, that's an immediate win. We've said we wanted a point guard. We kind of have a stopgap in Tyus Jones, but if he's a part of that deal, that's fine. I think the biggest hurdle in moving Bradley Beal right now is that no trade clause. I saw reporting that he's unwilling to go to the Bulls, so that kind of blew that. Kind of, I think they're working on a 3-4 team trade there, some crazy shit. But it's seeming increasingly less likely that we get Jimmy Butler, and I'm okay with that personally. I think if I had a choice between the two and I had to make a move, it would be for De'Aaron Fox. And I mean, Mike, I mean, we just go back to the 2017 draft, right, man? I mean, what is Josh Jackson doing these days? Does anybody know?
Probably smoking a doobie on his grandmother's porch, or playing in Portugal.
Yeah, something like that. I mean, according to his Wikipedia page, he's not playing anywhere professionally, and last played for the Sacramento Kings, ironically enough. But I mean, obviously, you know, I love playing the coulda, woulda, shoulda game with drafts of all kinds. But honestly, like, things happen the way they do, and then the moves that happen after that kind of are shaped based off of that. So who's to say that if we had, you know, drafted De'Aaron Fox, or really anybody but Josh Jackson, how much different this team would look, and how many other things may or may not have happened if that were to have been the case. So, you know, you gotta live in the present. And if we could get him now, I think that it would be an improvement, but I don't think it pushes the Suns over the top, because I think the issues run far deeper. And one of those glaring issues is, what the fuck do we do with Yusuf Nurkic? Does anybody know?
Ian, do you know?
Do
you know?
You trade him for pennies.
Pennies on the dollar?
What else are you going to do? He's sitting on the bench. He's causing distractions. I mean, obviously you don't know what's going on with his relationship between him and Bud, but I mean, it sucks because he's your best rebounder right now on the roster. I mean, okay. Just because the kid – the new guy got, what, 18 or 19 rebounds in that one game? I don't know. He either set a record or tied Charles Barkley's debut in the home arena rebound number. I don't remember exactly what he finished with. So he had a great game, right? But I was watching the game yesterday. How come we're rolling with Mason Plumlee for the last quarter of the game in there? Why didn't the kid get some roll in there? So Nurk's got to go. I mean, he's absolutely got to go. Something's going to happen, right? You don't bench Bradley Beal. You don't flip your 2031 first round pick into three lesser first round picks for no reason. There is something happening. They sent Oso Iguodaro down to the G League today. Something is going to happen before this deadline. Is it Butler? Who knows? Knowing our luck, we're going to hate it, and we're probably going to get Butler. You guys heard he got suspended indefinitely. So he walked out a shoot around before the game because he was told that he wasn't starting. So Butler's definitely played his last game for the Miami Heat. His cost just went down because the Heat are handcuffed. They want to get rid of him. Maybe the Suns can afford that asking price now. De'Aaron Fox, I was very surprised when I saw that because looking at the standings, I mean, I don't watch very many Sacramento Kings games. Don't get me wrong. But like they're in like the same position wise, seating wise, record wise as the Suns right now. And they have a talented roster. I don't see why in any world they would trade De'Aaron Fox unless someone's going to overpay out the ass for him, which I bet you that's probably what they're looking at.
Yeah, that is exactly what they're looking at. He's on an expiring. His free agency's coming up. He told Sacramento he's not going to re-sign there. So they're just trying to get something for him instead of letting him walk. And I think that's going to be the end of the Kings in terms of this era. You know, they're going to go into rebuild mode is what I'm trying to say. So I think that they're going to want some draft capital back. I don't know if it's possible. I don't really mess with the trade machine or anything like that too much, but I could see a situation where De'Aaron Fox goes to Miami, Butler comes to Phoenix, and then, you know, you send out Nurkic and there's some pick swaps in there and things like that. I think I can see that happening. If I were Phoenix, I would be looking at De'Aaron Fox and thinking that that's easily the better way to go because, you know, Devin Booker is still your franchise corner piece. He's the same age as De'Aaron Fox. So you're now competitive for the rest of Devin Booker's primes again, instead of, you know, the rest of Kevin Durant and Bradley Beal's primes, which is what it is now. And, you know, Booker can't do it himself as good as he is. So it's really about how long can you keep that championship window open for? And I think it's open a lot longer if you go for De'Aaron Fox, but it also looks to me like it's going to be a pipe dream just because there's so little that Arizona can move right now.
It's 100% a pipe dream. Yeah. I mean, Bradley Beal's not going to waive his no trade clause to go to Sacramento, where he's going to have to pair up with DeMar DeRozan, who shoots 500 mid-range jumpers a game. Come on. You think Bradley Beal is okay with moving to the bench here and he's going to have to go there and not be one of the, you know, steadfast guys who is controlling the basketball and controlling the offense all the time? No, I think Bradley Beal is the reason why everything has been held up for so long. It obviously is because of the no trade clause, but specifically for the Phoenix Suns trying to find the match in the contract dollars. And I think that goes back to Tallman's point that he was saying about trading Yusuf Nurkic. Yes, the Suns need to trade Yusuf Nurkic. They need to get him out of the building. He needed to be gone yesterday, right? But the guy makes $19 million. He's not on an expiring contract. He's still under contract for next season. So it's not even kind of like a baiting trade where you can send somebody Yusuf and then they can cut ties with him because they know he's off the books next year. Like, unfortunately, specifically for him, I think the Suns are going to have to hold on to him unless he can be part of this five-team trade that gets Jimmy Butler to the Suns. And then you just include him to leave, but they're going to have to make the move in the summer where I think it'll be more enticing for teams because then they'll know that he's only under contract for 1 year and he'll be gone. But yeah, I mean, was that De'Aaron Fox year? That draft was the same with Jason Tatum and Markel Fultz and that draft. I mean, once again, the Suns strike out, but...
Well, and like Frank, I think Frank Ntilikina was supposed to be
He never. That was a strike. That was a strikeout as well.
But yeah, I mean, it's tough because I mean, Mike, not to beat a dead horse, but just to like emphasize, like, without Bradley Beal being willing to go somewhere, there isn't enough money to keep all of the, like, there's just no way to keep all of our three guys. And that's why you had even heard the rumor swirling of them possibly moving on from Kevin Durant as well. But I think those quickly kind of dissolve because the second you let go of Kevin Durant, you're pretty much throwing in the white flag. And then at that point, you might as well let Devin Booker go early as well. I was listening to the game the other night. I don't remember who we were playing, but I think I was listening to, I don't think we've played any national games, so I might have been listening to the away stream commentators. But the question was asked if the Suns are a contender right now, the way the roster is constructed. And the answer was no. And I have to agree. And it has nothing to do with our starting five. It's the lack of depth on our bench. And this is the second season in a row we're dealing with this. So that's why it's hard for me to find hope, because no matter what we do to swap out these guys that are supposed to be our starters, we are still struggling on the back half and the guys that are going to come in and give these guys rest. And God forbid one of our starters gets injured, having one of these guys come in and play significant minutes. I mean, I love what Josh Okogie did for us defensively, but from a shooting perspective, most of the time he was a liability. So I'm not going to say good riddance. I mean, we got a good position of need back in return in Nick Richards, and I've been very impressed with what he's doing lately, but he's not the cure-all either. I don't know, man. It's the problems run so deep on this team. You're seeing articles and reports like Tallman was kind of alluding to, where Mike Budenholzer hasn't talked to Jusuf Nurkić in over 2 months. And you heard that as well with Monty Williams. I don't know about Frank Vogel, but it's like, I don't know. I obviously don't know what it's like being in the NBA with those highest stakes, those, you know, feelings and everything going around, but it's just, my perspective as a fan that's not making millions of dollars to play basketball is, you are blessed and you are a professional and you are asked to do a job. And why are you acting like a child, not talking to your head coach, not having communication just because of frustrations over playing time or utilization? And like, have those conversations like an adult. Use your agent to request a trade and do it back room, you know, type of thing. But then also it makes me ask, like, how much is Mike Budenholzer contributing to this? Has he tried to approach Jusuf Nurkić to have a man-to-man conversation with him about, like, hey, you know, you're not, you know, I'll be completely honest with you, you're not part of the vision I have for this team, and I'm working with James Jones and Matt Ishbia to see if we can move you, but you just got to be patient with us. So just, you know, hang out, do what we ask, and we'll try and do right by you. But instead, it's this shade and these subtweets and the interviews. It's just, it's gross, man.
The pettiness of it is just wild, man. Like, I was listening to, what is it, Cameron Cox of, I think, Channel 12 News Sports interview him and do kind of a sit down. And that's where Jusuf Nurkić kind of detailed what's been happening and him being a professional, staying ready whenever his number is called. And then, of course, the one time they ask about, like, do you think that you'd be able to mend the relationship? The answer is no comment. Like, what is this high school petty bullshit, man? Like, are you telling me that they're in the training facility and, like, if they see each other, they turn the other way and, like, take the stairs instead of the elevator because they're worried that they might run into each other? Like, how is this happening? How does this happen? I think the easy answer is egos, right? Right, Tallman, do you think? Or is it something else?
Oh, who knows? Where is he from? Maybe it's something from his homeland. Just kidding. No, it's ridiculous. I mean, well, so yeah, maybe, who knows? I mean, compare him to Bradley Beal, right? So you have two players on the team where, you know, Nurk and Beal, where maybe they feel like people don't want them there, right? They're getting pushed out. Look at how Beal's handling it and look at how Nurk's handling it. Beal's remaining professional. He's coming off the bench. He's not bitching at all. Granted, you can tell in his demeanor and maybe his tone in some of the interviews that he's doing, but he's not saying any of those things that are going to be, you know, further distractions to the team. So he's handling it as a professional would handle it. And then the guy that we want to switch him out for in Butler, like we're talking, he's getting suspended again. He's walking out on the team. He's missing flights because he's not getting what he wants, you know, even though he's making $49 million this year. And he's got a player option for $50 million next year. So it's crazy that you want to get rid of one cancer. I'm talking about Nurk. I'm not talking about Beal because he's, like I said, he's handling it well. But you want to get rid of that, and then you want to bring in another one. And there's so many Suns fans, you see it all over social media, that are just so set on bringing Butler in, like it's going to solve everybody's problems. It's not going to. If we see this actually come to fruition or any other major splash change, that's just an absolute desperate attempt to save this season, to save another season, another year before Durant gets older, you know, to save this, whatever little window we have for, to be competitive, to actually compete, you know, for an NBA finals. I mean, even compare how we played against the Cleveland Cavaliers recently. They played us out of the fucking gym. We don't belong in the discussion right now as a team that can actually seriously compete for an NBA final. So if we're going to flip and think Butler's going to come in and save our problems, and he's going to come in on day one and be the leader of this team, how terrible is that? If you need somebody to come in from outside to basically save your team and be the leader, to be the alpha male, what does that say about your team right now? We already know Durant, he just wants to play basketball. He doesn't want to be the leader. He leads by example on the floor. Where's Book at, man? Who's holding these players accountable? And then you talk about the Budenholzer aspect. I was watching the game last night where, if you guys watched to the very end, where Grayson Allen was at the free throw line, where that game, by the way, shouldn't have been that close. It's 103-90 in the fourth quarter, and you let them come back into that game. But going back to Grayson Allen on the free throw line, he's sitting there arguing with Budenholzer at the stripe, where he's animated. Grayson Allen's like, "You want me to miss it? What? Are you stupid?" Like, I don't know what he said exactly, but he said, "Okay, all right, fine, I'll miss it. Because Budenholzer was yelling at him to miss the second free throw on purpose, right? To run out the clock. So I think there's 1.9 seconds left or something. But it's like, where's that disconnect? Why is Grayson Allen and the head coach arguing with 1.9 seconds left from the sideline to him being on the free throw line? Like, that, I don't know. I don't know what that says about the team. I don't know what you guys think.
Well, first and foremost, I'll let Chris go, but I got to say, I just got to throw this in real quick. Ladies and gentlemen of the internet, if you didn't know, now you know. VSP Tallman knows basketball, so we can put those items to bed. But Chris, go ahead, man.
No, just real quick. Like, I mean, everything we're talking about is on point. And what it comes down to is the optics. And it's not good optics for the Suns right now. I mean, it's great that we're in this big national conversation, but I'd rather it be for us having a really good basketball team that's winning a lot of games rather than a team that's underachieving and in constant turmoil and turnover. And last thing I want to say about the optics of the Phoenix Suns is, like, we've seen in the last couple weeks, and I think Mike, you had posted it out on the VSP page. There's a picture of Kevin Durant and Devin Booker chuckling it up during a loss. And it's just, the Suns fans see that, and it's like, man, ain't shit funny. What are you laughing about? Y'all suck. Like, I guess, like, I want your feelings on that too, but to rope Ian back in here real quick. Do you remember seeing anything like that during the Nets big three experiment with Harden, Kyrie, and KD, where they were not producing the way they were expected to on the court, but they were still laughing and acting like it was all fun and games?
Yeah, Kevin Durant, when he was on the Nets, was a coaster, like 100%. Like, the regular season did not matter to him. And granted, you know, he had the revolving door of him, Kyrie, and Harden. So I think he assumed that he was making the playoffs no matter what. But when all the controversy was going on with Kyrie, people kept asking him about it. And he was like, "I don't care, just tip the ball up." And that was kind of his attitude throughout the entire his entire stint with the Nets. Was anytime something serious came up that was, you know, kind of hindering or hurting the team, his reaction was always like, I just want to play basketball. It's like he has a one track mind where all he wants to do is be on the court and play, and nothing else really matters. So, like, it doesn't seem like locker room drama or anything like that, that is like off the court issues. He wants no fucking part of it at all. And it's extremely frustrating to see. And I think that's what you guys are seeing as well, where you just, you see this guy and you want him to be a leader, but at the end of the day, I think he's going to go down as the greatest role player of all time. If that makes any sense. Yeah, you're smiling, so it looks like it makes some sense.
Makes sense to me.
Yeah.
The greatest role player of all time. I love it. Yeah, I mean, the gentleman, if you think about it, the Phoenix Suns have been, the ebbs and flows are happening right now, right? The Phoenix Suns have been playing better basketball since they moved Bradley Beal off to the bench. I mean, who would have guessed? They also haven't played that great of competition, you know. One of the other things I think you guys talked about too, Nick Richards has had some really good moments. Look at the teams that he's playing and then look at the competition as it steps up. He's struggling a little bit. He's struggling, right? There's a reason that Mason Plumlee was playing down the stretch of that game. But yeah, I mean, that kind of last minute situation with Grayson Allen on the free throw line, it's still a team that is just not synced up. It's too many pieces moving in way different directions. And now that guys are finally getting a little bit more healthy, they are starting to put it together against the teams that they need to. And, you know, let's not throw it to the side. That Clippers team is a good team in the Western Conference. And they got Kawhi back as well. So we'll see what happens for them. But then I'll also go back to one of Tallman's comments that really stood out to me is, you know, making these moves to try and take advantage of the fleeting years of Kevin Durant being one of the best players in the NBA, right? Where are the studs in the Western Conference? It's all in the youth. The Oklahoma City Thunder, best team in the NBA right now, guys. I mean, outside of the Cleveland Cavaliers, if you want to put a record within it, that's a team that plays team basketball together more than others. But Oklahoma City just has weapons and superstars already that are young. I mean, crap, you can throw in the Houston Rockets, who are, what, 31 and 12? Amen Thompson has his first 30-point career night last night on the road against the Boston Celtics. Like, adding Jimmy Butler to try and go up against these already stellar teams that are the best in the West that are 10 years younger than these guys, we're still going to get run off the court. I mean, and then another team like the Memphis Grizzlies, Ja Morant is just a game changer, and he's young and a high flyer. So I think that was the big thing that stood out for me when Tallman said that is, yeah, they're trying, and Matt Ishbia and James Jones are trying every last ditch effort to put together a truly competitive team to match up to where, unfortunately, this Phoenix Suns team is not going to be able to meet over the next couple of years with all of the draft capital that is gone and the inability to sign younger superstars with the amount of money that are being paid to three players. So this is the last-ditch effort. And it's tough, but we'll see what's going to happen. It's going to happen, guys. Jimmy Butler's going to somehow end up on the Phoenix Suns, man.
Don't say that, Mike. Don't
tell him.
Don't say that.
I have a feeling it's going to happen.
Oh, you guys are killing me. You guys are killing me. But it probably will happen. I mean, the stars are lining up. There's moves being made. We're 9 days away from the trade deadline. So, man, by this time next week, we might be talking about it. But not next Tuesday, because next Tuesday, Valley Sports Plug is going to do a Super Bowl preview stream. We're going to invite some guests on, not Ian, and we're going to talk about the NFL and the Super Bowl coming up in early February. But we'd be remiss if we didn't talk a little bit about the NFL today, maybe give you a little bit of a teaser and share our opinions. At least we can talk about the conference games that happened over this past weekend. Of course, the Kansas City Chiefs defeated the Buffalo Bills to advance to the Super Bowl, and the Philadelphia Eagles beat the Cinderella story Washington Commanders and Cliff Kingsbury to advance to the Super Bowl behind three Saquon Barkley touchdowns and three Jalen Hurts rushing touchdowns. So I think, Mike, we got to start right with the main pressing story. That's, I mean, both of these games were controversial for different reasons, but starting with the early game, Commanders and Eagles, I'll just throw it out there. My opinion, the NFL needs to do something about the tush push and the way that play is run, because it just, you get a 1 yard situation to gain and it's automatic. I mean, me and Tallman did talk about this a little bit yesterday. Jalen Hurts might be a special exception because, and Josh Allen, similar with him, but guys like Kyler Murray aren't going to be running the tush push. You know, you're not going to see that. So it does kind of start to walk that line of, are you just making a rule to stop one player, which unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, isn't unheard of in sports.
It's not, but you guys already know where I stand. Ban it yesterday, man. It's boring. Like, what happened to utilizing all of these offensive weapons, getting creative on the offensive side? Now we're just doing manpower against manpower to see who can push for an inch. Like, that's so dumb, man. And what is it? Whenever this conversation comes about, I kind of think of what's the Seth Rogen movie with Kim Jong-un?
Oh, the
interview.
The interview? Yeah.
They hate us because they ain't us, right? Yeah, I hate you because I can't run the tush push with Kyler Murray. We were never going to be able to do that. And even when we did try it with Clayton Tune, it was disgusting. It didn't work more than half the time. It's just a boring part of football. Why can't we line up in the trenches and hand the ball off to Saquon Barkley and see if he can get 1 yard again? You know, like, do a design bootleg run with Jalen Hurts. I mean, like, that's how he scored most of his... I know that's how he scored once at least, but it was the same thing, right? We had to watch that atrocity happen against the Commanders, I think, in the third quarter with the multiple offsides penalties where their safety is jumping over. Then they get warned that the referees can award points and people knew that was a thing. Who knew that the
refs could award points? I didn't know that.
It's probably really deep within the rule book, but what, you know, that's a situation like that, that spurs, like this shows on Yahoo Sports, spurs a rule change, right? We have to go deep into the bag to talk about giving points because you're just going to run the tush push seven times in a row. Like, at what point do we look ourselves in the face and understand that football is a physical sport? It's all about physicality. It's all about setting the line. I get it. But what, like, it is entertainment at the same time. Like, let's throw a fade to AJ Brown, see if he can get up there. You know, let's do an end around to Devonta Smith and see if he can find his way into the end zone. You know, like, maybe I'm not a realist for thinking of it this way, but, you know, after you watch the bull that happened in the first game, then we come out and we have to watch Josh Allen run it like 6-7 different times, and it never worked for the Buffalo Bills, and they kept doing it. So it's just boring. That's my true viewpoint at the end of the day. It's boring football to watch, and I hate it. Time to go.
And I think another part of it that maybe some people don't consider is, Mike, you're right, it is boring. And what adds to it being boring is the fact that 9 times out of 10, it's going to a video review to try and figure out where the fucking ball ended up. Because Jalen Hurts is one of the only guys who can stick his head in there and get the 1 or 2 yards fairly easily. Whereas that was the big controversy out of that Chiefs-Bills game is like, did Josh Allen get across the line? Did he not? But, I mean, why does it even have to come down to that? Like, is Mike onto something that make these teams go for it on the ground or through the air?
Yeah. I mean, this has been a hot topic for ever since the end of last season, right? This is nothing new. I'm torn on it, to be honest. I mean, you already mentioned this is, if you're an Eagles fan, you love that play, right? If it's your team doing it, it's the best. It's your favorite play, probably. I was actually out. I was at Cold Beer and Burgers, plural, with my wife watching the snow game they played in. And, of course, there's a loud Philadelphia fan at the end of the bar. Guess what his shirt said? It said brotherly shove, right? All right, so that's a play on this whole this whole tush push play. I'm torn on it because it is football. It is a very physical play, right? It's got a place in the game, but at the same time, if you got rid of it, you could still do the QB sneak. You just got to get. You can't let that guy that you bring in your fullback and all he does is push your quarterback, shove him across the line of scrimmage, which that's the touch. I can see where it gets boring and it's repetitive. And I don't know. I'm torn on it. Do I think they're going to remove it in the offseason? If that went to a vote on the owners, I don't think it would pass. I don't think they would remove it. Doesn't mean I like to watch it, but I don't think it's going anywhere.
How does pushing your quarterback show any athletic ability? I thought that was the point of playing at the highest level, is to see the best athletes do the best.
It's just tug of war at that point, and who is stronger? And if you keep allowing things like this, we're inching closer and closer to the NFL just becoming a rugby league with, you know, some modifications. You know, and I'm sure there are already teams looking to follow that Eagles model where they're going and scouting guys where they're just, you know, athletes or whatever that take up one or two spots. And their only job is to come in and shove your quarterback into the end zone.
No, that's a great point. I mean, it's like the Saints having Taysom Hill. That's what Taysom Hill did on the Saints for the last two seasons. He'd come in for all the QB sneaks. I don't know. It's a copycat league, right? So once the Eagles had success with it, the rest of the league saw it. Everyone started doing it. I just wish the Cardinals had somebody on the roster that could do it. I don't know.
I mean, no, you're right. I mean, I think that is probably, if I had to guess, what's going to happen is they're going to let it breathe for now and see if it runs its course, because we've seen gimmicks before. I mean, the Wildcat offense was super hot for a period of time there, and people didn't love that. But I don't know. I mean, I think trick plays and unique formations are a lot more fun than just watching 22 grown men shove meat, you know, like.
Yeah, there you go.
But there are websites for that. If you want to see that, then there are websites for that.
No, for lack of a better term, one would say. Oh,
shove meat. But I mean, you even mentioned how it didn't work. So Josh Allen, he had an incredible success rate with that tush push during the regular season, and then you didn't see it work in that second game against the Chiefs, which he did get the first down on that one. That was crazy. Because when you have so many bodies piling on each other, how do you review that? Yeah, you have eight different camera angles on it, but you got players blocking the ball in every single, you can't, if you're marked short of it, you can't overturn that because you don't have definitive video evidence that it did cross the line. So that's another thing where it's like, they need to instill some technology. Like, why do we still have the chain game? Like, why are those guys standing out there? Yeah, they have the fake line. What, like, I mean, there's got to be technology whether it's in the ball, whether it's on the field somewhere, where they know exactly where the ball is when the player is down, or like, what the fuck are they doing?
Microchip the football, yeah.
They have the technology where you push in your shopping cart, and if you go outside the perimeter, that shit locks up, and you can't go anywhere. So you're telling me they can't run little tiny wires under the field, have something in the ball? I mean, chips are so tiny these days. You can do it.
It's time for that. It's like the electronic strike zone in MLB. You know, it's like that's got to happen. It's only a matter of time. It's got to happen in the NFL too. But again, that was a little tangent on the tush push. But just going off of how the Bills got burned, and I was joking with Chris yesterday. I was like, oh, it was the refs were looking at the replay like, oh, this could go either way. He might have got it, but it's close enough. We can get it with the Chiefs so that they win the game. You know, it's like. I don't know.
Well, maybe we'll save some of that talk for next week, because I love my favorite conspiracy theory. If anyone was watching the end of that game, that Chuck passed to Dalton Kincaid, they threw a flag on that play just in case he caught it.
Yeah.
Because if he caught it, you know, it'd be a hold or OPI or something, and it's coming back anyway. I mean, if you believe in the script, but. Yeah, I don't know. It's time. It's time, man. And I think you can, you know, don't worry about losing jobs. You can still have the chain gang be out there for like a physical representation of where the players need to get to to make the line for a first down in the line of scrimmage. But then if it's a close call, you just defer to that technology and you keep it pushing. And then you don't have these long, you know, game delaying reviews that make it boring. And it's great for bathroom breaks, but I mean, there's enough, football is a slow enough game where you got plenty of time to get your beer and get your restroom breaks in. But fellas, I think we're kind of winding down here. Ian, sorry we went a little long on football there at the end, but I did have one last kind of fringe topic I wanted to bring up, still sports related. And boy, do I love when my two worlds collide. I don't know if you guys saw this. There is an NFL tight end for the Tennessee Titans, Chigozim Akinwunmi. I fucked that up. Goes by Chig on X. He maxed out his Iron Man old school RuneScape account. Takes roughly 3,500 hours of in-game playing time to achieve this milestone. I know you guys will not be able to appreciate how incredible this is, but for a point of reference, I consider myself to be a casual player. I don't play every day, but it is in my rotation that I go back to from time to time. I started playing again in 2020, so 5 years ago, and I am nowhere near maxing out my account. This is an incredible feat in gaming, honestly. And not to nerd out too much or bore you with the details, but when you're an Iron Man, you're not able to trade with other players in game. You have to collect all the shit that you get through killing monsters or whatever else is in the game. Versus me, the way I play it is I can just go trade with someone. I can have someone give me money and get new weapons and armor and shit that way. This dude grinded it all out himself, beat the hardest boss in the game as part of maxing out his account. Honestly incredible. And to get it posted on ESPN as well, I love the shade in the comments. It's like, I'd rather have this than Bleacher Report saying Bronny makes shots in warm-up. So I was like, even Bronny's catching strays even when talking about old school RuneScape, a game that's 20 plus years old. Man, I love it. I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on that, but had to share.
It's just crazy to find the time to do that and professional football.
So true.
Like, that's all I have for you.
Yeah, I'm
145 days.
Yeah, I think he's doing the podcast circuit right now since this news broke, and he's kind of blowing up. So I'll have to see if he talks about how long he's been playing on his account. Yeah, I think the current iteration of the game has been up and active since like 2008, 2009, maybe right around that 2010 at the latest. But so it's possible he's been working on this for 10, 15 years, probably more likely than not. But I mean, I was talking to my brother a bit about this because he plays the game as well. And, you know, when you're playing for the Tennessee Titans, you have a longer off season than a lot of other athletes do. So,
Oh man. Dude, Akinwunmi showing up for nerd culture. I love it. Here's one thing, right? I am not within this space or this type of video games, but here's another truth of the matter of the fact. One of my favorite sayings, gentlemen, I probably put in 1,000+ hours in Grand Theft Auto 5, you know? So we've all been there to some extent. It's just wild to see. What did you say, Tallman? 164 days worth of gaming?
So I did you said 3,500 hours.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's just over 145 days.
145 days. True dedication, trying to master your craft. You got a third of a year. Yeah, hell yeah. ESPN, let's report some more of that stuff. Yeah, I don't need to worry about Bronny's jump shot.
That's also, Chris, if I'm not mistaken, that's 3,500 hours if you do everything right the first time, right? Like, that's not counting the number of times you probably fuck something up and, you know, you have to, like, do double work for it. So,
oh, yeah. And, I mean, I would imagine, I would venture to guess, for most people, it probably takes longer than that, especially if you're playing with the Iron Man restrictions. Like, I mean, I think I wish I had it. I think I'm maybe at like somewhere between 60 and 80 days of gameplay logged in this game. But like, yeah, I mean, I have a good account. I've obviously curated it for a long time, but nothing like that. That's crazy. And so it's like, it's dedication. And like, my first thought was like, I've never heard of this guy. It was the first thing. Look him up. He's their starting tight end.
He's number one on the depth chart. So yeah, maybe he does.
Your grandma drafted him in our fantasy league. And oh, I remember going, who the fuck is that? That's the connection I have.
Well, and she won the fantasy league, so maybe she knows something we don't.
She did, you're right.
She knew something we didn't, that's for sure.
Oh my god. Shout out Grandma Linda. But yeah, if you're curious, guys, DM me at me on X and I'll share with you my RuneScape name and we can go do some raids together, do some boss fights.
God, you're such a nerd.
Fuck you. It's not, you know how big World of Warcraft was? This is basically World of Warcraft, but better. So
at least World of Warcraft is more thought out. I don't know.
What? More thought out?
Well, it's not. Well, because you, I don't know. I'm not, okay. You know what? I don't have the experience to be able to have this argument with you. I don't know. Because I,
what, you really, ignorant slut.
There you go. I never really played World of Warcraft.
Do you still have to pay monthly for World of Warcraft, or is that not a thing anymore?
I think you do. I don't know, honestly. But also, like, it's funny with this day and age, there's so many private servers that you can join.
Oh, true.
I mean, that might also cost money. Sometimes those are just like donation based, or you can play on them for free and then just make donations. But yeah, I don't know. But yeah, guys, I mean, this was a lot of fun. I guess we can go around the horn here for any last thoughts. Ian, let's start with you since you're our special guest here.
Thanks for having me. Starting to get cards graded and I'm going to auction them off pretty soon. So that's the thing that I'm doing and I'll keep you posted on it.
Tom, and what about you? I mean, I know all three of us are getting into the card game in some form or fashion. Are you going to pick up the hobby?
No, I'm one and done with my, my pristine Paul Sewald Topps card here. So I'm just going to retire on top. With the Paul Sewald card. No, I don't know. I mean, I do kind of get stuck going through those short videos on social media where like you see people open up packs and stuff. It's catching my eye, but I don't know if I need something else that is going to suck more of my money away.
Are you sure, Tallman? You don't want to spend $40,000 on a card?
No. That's crazy. That
is that our future first baseman?
Spends that much money. No, designated hitter.
Designated hitter.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Taven. Yeah. You guys want to see something that I saw on Whatnot yesterday?
Show us, Mike. Show us.
You see how much that card is going for?
What is it?
$4,000? There's no way that payment process.
No, is that like an auction?
I think I cut. Yeah, that payment failed.
Yeah. What? Yeah, Whatnot is an auction app.
Dangerous as fuck. To be honest.
I will say there are some big time streamers though that will sell packs or boxes of cards for like $12,000. So the hobby is very much alive. Am I gone? Am I muted? Is anybody here? Is everybody here?
Yeah.
What just happened?
What just happened?
Oh my goodness.
Well, good thing that we're about to end.
Right. But holy shit.
No, I don't know. Did you guys hear? Sometimes I've seen people who will buy packs for like $12,000. So
I believe it.
It's insane. I mean, cards are at a all-time high and they just keep going up. But Tallman, I will say, I got my eye on a very, very special card just for you, man. I think I'm going to pull the trigger on it, and I think you're really going to like it.
Don't buy it. Don't buy the Michael Wilson card.
You're really going to enjoy it.
I know it's Michael Wilson. I know.
You don't know.
Yes,
Squad.
I do.
You don't know nothing.
Come on. Okay.
All right. Just be excited.
I'm excited. Thank you, Michael.
All right. But guys, we're heading into a special time of year, I think, in sports, right? We got Super Bowl coming up. We got waste management coming up, right? I mean, the NBA trade deadline, the All-Star festivities are right around the corner. Freaking spring training is about to be here in the Valley, man. This is what we wait all summer through to get to this moment in time in the year. So I'm very excited for what's coming up in the next couple of months, but Ian, Tom, and Chris, always appreciate you guys.
Yes, sir, Mike. It is always a pleasure, always a privilege and a pleasure, never a chore to hang out with you guys and talk sports. We're going to do this every Tuesday at 7 p.m. We will live stream right here on YouTube. We'll put the playback up the very next day for your listening pleasure on all the audio podcast streaming platforms. So make sure you like and subscribe right here on YouTube. Also follow us at AZ_VSP on Instagram, Twitter X, TikTok. Anywhere you find Valley Sports Plug, you can find us. If all else fails and you're struggling, go on Google, type in Valley Sports Plug, and we'll be right there. We're going to keep bringing you content, guys. It's a lot of fun. I am going to open up these two packs of Paldea Evolved that I picked up on my way home from work, see if I can get a nice pull. I'm a nerd out and be made fun of by Tallman, and that's okay. But want to thank you all for tuning in or listening back. Yeah, I probably will. So until next time, I'm Chris Patrick for Mr. Benjamin, VSP Tallman, and Dead Boy Donut Ian. See ya. Peace.